Today, when will the debt elastic ping back? Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the Property Imperative Weekly to the 7th of July 2018, our digest of the latest finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. Here is the link. This week, the RBA left the cash rate on hold once again at 1.5% and continued the trend of doing nothing. In fact, reading the release from Tuesday, it's worth noting two things. First, they are being very gentle in referring to home price falls, saying, nationwide, measures of housing prices are little changed over the past 6 months. Conditions in the Sydney and Melbourne housing markets have eased, with prices declining in both markets. Housing credit growth has declined, with investor demand having slowed noticeably. Lending standards are tighter than they were a few years ago. Second, we think they would like to lift rates to more normal levels, but cannot, thanks to high debt and downside risks. They are stuck. I believe the next move will be down as the economy weakens, dragged down by a fading property market, rising interest rates internationally, and concerns about China's economic dynamo. But not yet. Now compare this with a BIS report also out this week. The BIS is worried by the current low interest rate environment, and in a new report by a committee chaired by Philip Lowe, yes, the same Philip Lowe, warns of the impact on financial stability across the financial services sector, with pressure on banks via net interest margins and on insurers and super funds. They warn that especially in competitive markets, risks rise in this scenario. Low interest rates may trigger a search for yield by banks, partially in response to declining profits, exacerbating financial vulnerabilities, and in addition, keeping rates lower for longer may create the need to lift rates sharper later, with the risks of rising debt costs and the broader economic shocks which follows. A salutary warning. We discuss this in more detail in our post to bail in or to bail out? That is indeed the question. The contrast between the theoretical macro policy position and the local situation here in Australia must at least be giving Mr. Lowe a bit of a headache. The trajectory of global rates is upwards, as we'll discuss later. The latest from the Fed is that further rate rises will be required and expected. So the Fed is going to do what the BIS report suggested. But the net result is pressure on bank funding here. Remember that around 30% of bank funding comes from overseas, and the BBSW is higher still. Two points to make here. First, as credit availability is the strongest influence of home prices, the easy access to international capital markets the banks have had in recent years means that they lent more, up to 30% more, hence disastrously high home prices. Second, the weight of evidence is that more banks will lift rates. Citigroup, for example, forecasts that the rising cost of funding will prompt Australia's four major banks to increase their mortgage interest rates independently of the RBA, with the banks tipped to begin lifting their mortgage rates by an average of 8 basis points by September. Citigroup adds that the rise in bank short-term funding costs since early 2018 is likely to be sustained. And in effect, the tenor of the RBA minutes signals to the banks that they can indeed go ahead and lift rates. As rates have fallen, households have leveraged up, supported by loose lending policy and driving home prices to massive multiples of household income. as data from IFM investors showed this week. And even small rate rises will hurt, as we showed in our latest mortgage stress release for June, which was out this week. Mortgage stress continues to rise. Across Australia, more than 970,000 households are estimated now to be in mortgage stress, compared with last month's 966,000. This equates to 30.3% of owner-occupied borrowing households. In addition, more than 22,000 of these are now in severe stress, and we estimate that more than 57,100 households risk 30-day default in the next 12 months. We expect bank portfolio losses to be around 2.8 basis points, although losses in Western Australia are higher at 5.2 basis points. And we continue to see the impact of flat wage growth, rising living costs, and higher real mortgage rates. We discussed this in our post, The Debt Pips Are Squeaking, in which we also discussed the latest anemic retail sales figures and the latest household debt-to-income ratio from the RBA, which is now at a record 190.1. We are literally drowning in debt, and it's structural. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare released a new report showing that home ownership is out of reach for growing numbers of Australians, thanks to high prices and poor affordability. They say that over the last 20 years or so, Australia has seen a shift from outright ownership to owning with a mortgage, and a shift from overall home ownership to private rental. Between 1995 and 2015, the proportion of outright owner-occupied households fell from 41.8% to 30.4%. The proportion of households owning with a mortgage has increased from 29.6% to 37.1% over the same period. And overall, the proportion of households in home ownership fell from 71.4% to 67.5%. There has also been an increase in the proportion of households renting privately from 18.4% to 25.3%, and a decline in the proportion of households renting through state and territory housing programs from 5.5% to 3.5%. Equally telling is home ownership rates between 1971 and 2016 by selected five-year age groups. The home ownership rate of those 30 to 34 years old was 64% and 50% for 25 to 29-year-olds in 1971. 45 years later, these rates have decreased notably, with the home ownership rate of 30 to 34-year-olds falling 14 percentage points to 50%. And similarly, that of 25 to 29-year-olds fell 13 percentage points to 37%. While declines are evident for other age groups, they are much less marked. Also, fewer Australians are tending to own their home at retirement. For Australians nearing retirement, for example, age groups 50 to 54, 55 to 59, and 60 to 64, home ownership rates peaked in 1996 at 80%, 82%, and 83% respectively. Since 1996, however, there's been a gradual decline in home ownership rates, most notably in the 50 to 54 year age group, which has seen a 6.6 percentage point fall over these 20 years from 80.3% to 73.7%. This is one reason why we are watching closely our down trader segment, people seeking to sell and release capital. There are around 1.2 million in this state, compared with around 600,000 up traders and 150,000 first-time buyers. So, on simple supply-demand logic, more people selling than buying means prices will fall further. And on that note, CoreLogic said that the weighted average clearance rate has tracked below 60% for 8 consecutive weeks now, while over the same 8-week period last year, clearance rates were tracking within the low 70 to high 60% range. Last week, Melbourne's final auction clearance rate fell to 57.2% across a lower volume of auctions week on week, with 791 held, down on the 941 auctions over the previous week, when there was a 59.9% clearance rate. In Sydney, less than half of the homes taken to auction sold last week. The city returned a final auction clearance rate of 49.7%, down slightly on the 50.1% from the previous week. With volumes across the city remaining relatively steady over the week, with a total of 634 held. All of the remaining auction markets saw a lower volume of auctions last week, and the final clearance rate across each market also falling week on week. There was also a larger number of passed-in auctions. Jared Minnack from Minnack Advisors said this week that the housing market looks thin, hinting that prices may be unusually sensitive to a change in demand. Historically, housing market turnover tracked price growth. However, turnover has been soft relative to price gains over the past 3 to 4 years, and in the March 2018 quarter, turnover fell to the lowest level since the 1990 recession. There are still many economists talking of just a small slide in prices over the next few months, but we suspect that they are underestimating the impact of tighter credit. For example, Macquarie suggested that from their annual mystery shopping survey, mortgage power, the amount people could get when applying for a mortgage, has not dropped that much at all. But in fact, it seems the non-banks, those not under so much scrutiny from APRA, is where the biggest loans reside. Whereas UBS, the arch property bears, suggests that credit tightening will continue as lending flows ease, saying one of the key recommendations of the Royal Commission is likely to be a stricter interpretation of responsible lending. In particular, reasonable steps required to verify customers' financial positions. This is likely to require credit licensees, both banks and non-banks, to verify living expenses from customers' transaction banking and credit card data over a period of around 12 months. They go on to say that, as ANZ stated in its submission to the Royal Commission, verifying living expenses from transaction account and credit cards is operationally complex and will likely require substantial investment in technology to automate this process. So UBS believes that while the major banks will be able to absorb these costs, such technological investments may be prohibitive for some of the smaller players. Therefore, they believe that any potential regulatory mismatch benefiting the smaller banks and non-banks is unlikely to be sustainable. In other words, credit will be tighter soon, driving prices lower. The CoreLogix Housing Index showed that prices slipped again last week, in Sydney down 0.13%, Melbourne down 0.11%, Adelaide down 0.01%, and Perth down 0.07%. Brisbane bucked the trend and rose 0.02%. On a 12-month basis, Sydney on average has dropped 4.69%, while Perth has fallen 2.08%. The other centres have risen just a little. But it's worth remembering that Sydney prices are still 66% higher from the last trough. Melbourne 56%, Brisbane 21%, and Adelaide 19%. Perth is only 0.4% higher, thanks to the prevailing weak economic conditions in the West. And this weakness has also translated into rental rates, where Perth sees just a 3% rise over the past 10 years for houses and a small fall for units. Compare this with a national rise in rentals over the same period of 25.7%. And at the other end of the spectrum, rentals rose 53.8% for Hobart houses and 44.7% for units, highlighting the housing cost pressures there. Despite the falls in property values, and the expected future further falls, the AFR says that Labour has shrugged off suggestions from the property industry that its planned changes to negative gearing rules should be scrapped because of market conditions. They reported that Shadow Treasurer Chris Bowen told a Property Council of Australia forum in June that changes were about making long-term structural adjustments rather than addressing the short-term cycle. The policy was a once-in-a-generation reform. We think he's right. The Royal Commission in Darwin this week heard about the thousands of Aboriginal people who were sold unsuitable financial products and vulnerable consumers that were targeted by instant cash loan machines because the financial landscape supports predatory practices. Insurance agents were able to exploit and target Aboriginal people because the industry isn't fully regulated. An excellent The Conversation article made the point that the cultural, economic, and political arrangements that allow this to happen, and they include the complex language used to deceive consumers into buying unsuitable products, incentivized high-pressure sales tactics, and a lack of care and concern for vulnerable consumers. All of these aspects are within the scope of financial regulators. The funeral industry can push dodgy products because no one is watching. Predatory financial practices will continue until governments and/or regulators do something about it. And more evidence of regulators not doing their job and the financial sector simply exploiting their customers to make a quick buck. We heard this week that ASIC has accepted court-enforceable undertakings from the Commonwealth Bank of Australia and Australia and New Zealand Banking Group, under which the banks have agreed to change the way they distribute superannuation products to their customers. ASIC investigated CBA's distribution of its essential super product and ANZ's distribution of its Smart Choice Super and Pension product through bank branches. ASIC found a common practice of offering these products to customers at the conclusion of a fact-finding process about customers' overall banking arrangements. ASIC was concerned that customers may have thought, due to the proximity of the fact-finding process to the offer of Essential Super or Smart Super Choice, that the CBA branch staff or the ANZ branch staff were considering risks specific to the customer, which was not the case. These court-enforceable undertakings prevent CBA from distributing Essential Super in conjunction with a financial health check and ANZ from distributing Smart Choice Super in conjunction with an ANZ review. They also require CBA and ANZ to each make a $1.25 million community benefit payment. If there is a breach of the undertaking, ASIC can, under the ASIC Act, apply for orders from the courts to enforce compliance. But whilst individuals risk being sent to prison, as one Perth finance broker did this week, or permanently banned from the finance industry for loan fraud, the asymmetric penalties between the small guys and the big firms is, well, shameful. It seems to me regulators are going for the easy targets who cannot fight back, whilst imposing mild penalties on the big guys for fear of court proceedings. The balance is just plain wrong. Finally, looking across the markets, shares in Australia started the new financial year well, with most bank stocks going higher. Bendigo Bank was up 1.72%, Suncorp was up 0.54%, and even the languishing Bank of Queensland rose 0.77%. Westpac was up 0.85%, ANZ up 1.97% on its buybacks, NAB up 1.6% and CBA up 1.2%, though still below its peak in 2017 when it was above $82. So risks in the mortgage book are clearly not worrying investors that much just now. This despite the 90-day mortgage default rates going higher. As reported in the S&P Ratings Spin Index, Macquarie, who has more business offshore than onshore, rose 0.42% at 122.96, just off its all-time highs. The ASX 200 ended higher, up 0.91% to 6,272, a solid rise. The Aussie dollar did a little better too against the US dollar, settling at 74 cents, up 0.57%, and against the Chinese yuan, up 0.7% to $4.94. Now back to global debt. Deutsche Bank published a chart which showed that of the $50 trillion global bond market, about $8 trillion of these bonds are now trading at negative interest rates thanks to changes in interest rates across the market. Within the $50 trillion, the amount of non-financial corporate bonds has increased 2.7 times over the past decade to $11.7 trillion, according to McKinsey. Debt in China has outgrown that in the USA, based on GDP, with non-financial corporate debt in China sitting at 160% of GDP, compared with 97% in the USA, according to JP Morgan. The China credit boom is, well, booming. This all signals more trouble ahead, given that the US 3-month bond rate and LIBOR are both sitting at highs, and the 10-year US bond rate reflecting the expectation of more Fed rate hikes ahead. And the latest from the Fed is that further rate rises are required and expected. US stocks finished the week mostly higher, thanks mainly to low volumes of buyers on Friday. The S&P 500 finished the week up about 1.5%, and the Dow ended about 0.8% higher for the week. The big winner was the tech-heavy Nasdaq Composite, which closed up about 2.4% for the week. US employment data showed still solid growth in payrolls, but lower than expected wages, which eased inflation concerns. Non-farm payrolls rose by 213,000 in June. That was higher than the consensus estimates of 200,000. The jobless rate unexpectedly rose to 4% from 3.8%, missing consensus expectations for there to be no change as more people enter the labour force. Average hourly earnings advanced 0.2% month on month in June, below expectations. The data still suggests the Federal Reserve will gradually raise interest rates, and the markets are still pricing in 2 more rate hikes this year. The real unknown, though, is the US-China trade battle, which is now officially underway. The US has put tariffs in place on around $34 billion worth of Chinese goods, and the Chinese hit back straight away with tariffs on $34 billion of US goods going into effect. China said that the US had launched the largest trade war in economic history to date, and the US administration is already looking at ramping up the amount of tariffed goods, threatening another $16 billion in 2 weeks, and then more later. No one knows where this will all lead to, but there are risks for Australia and other countries getting caught in the crossfire. The US dollar endured a tough week that was not helped by the mixed jobs numbers that offered little encouragement for traders looking for faster Fed hikes. The dollar index, which compares the greenback to a basket of 6 currencies, was down around 0.7% for the week. The US dollar also faced pressure from the euro during the week. German Chancellor Angela Merkel resolved an immigration battle, and with her interior minister, that had threatened the future of her coalition government. Oil continued higher through the week as supply limits kicked in, up 1.33% to 73.91, and gold fell again, down 0.23% as risks abated. And finally, Bitcoin recovered a little to 6,615, but remains volatile, while the broader VIX index sits slightly above the lows seen last year, but below the peak from a few months back. So it seems that investors are banking on the debt elastic not snapping back anytime soon. But we'll be watching for further signs of stress, given the massive amount owing out there as rates rise. Meantime, banks are making hay, despite the level of uncertainty out there. As the BIS report put it, a key takeaway is that while a low for long scenario presents considerable solvency risk for insurance companies and pension funds and limited risk for banks, a snapback would alter the balance of vulnerabilities. We've all been warned. Before I sign off, mark your diary. On the 17th of July at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be running my next live streaming session, where you can discuss in real time the issues in play. Judging by the previous session, it will be a lively event. I'll schedule it shortly on our YouTube channel. If you like what you've heard here today, please like the post and add a comment or question. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst of Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.